gentlemen, it's time for Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host of the Alabella Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined tonight by Justin Troop and Chris Morgan.
What up?
It's going to be extra corny tonight.
And Horton Doughton.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody. It's demon time.
I'm excited.
I'm excited to kill more demons. That's why I'm here.
I apologize for us not releasing an episode last week. I fully anticipated releasing an episode even up to the last week of the year. I fell ill. I apologize. We'll make it up to you by the next, having a couple of great shows coming up.
Yep. I mean, he preemptively fell to Nurgle's Rot in anticipation of this episode.
Demons are back. I mean, they're in a big way. There's some changes, and I think that's probably – to be clear, this is – like the demons in and of itself are kind of like four codexes in one. And so it's going to be impossible for us to go over like all the ins and outs in one episode. So we will split this up over several episodes. I think I'm justified in saying that because there is a how you can go about looking at all these four different gods. They're going to have some very distinct differences between them, and then how the Loki mesh and the army special rules. I think it's going to give people a lot of options.
Now, Paul, in comparison to the Space Marine book, how thick is this?
I think it's about the same. I mean, okay. The codex itself is, it's like 136 pages or so.
Okay.
So it is about the same. I think I'm more referring to the complexities. I mean, we can kind of jump. Let me go right to the back here. You know, in the section right before it starts, it gets to the stratagems and the relics and that kind of stuff, where it tells you, like, you have, this is the Eternal Hordes, where it goes into telling you that your troops are going to be OPSEC, you know, the equivalent of OPSEC. And then it has the demonic Loki. Which is, if your army is battle-forged, all characters in the Chaos Demons Detachment gain the Demonic Locus, so long as every unit in that detachment owes its allegiance to the same Chaos God.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun way to really build out your small battalions, your spearheads, your vanguards, sticking to your mono-god thing so you can benefit from these Loki. It's going to be exciting to see the builds that come about with this.
Yeah, and I think it's going to create some... There'll be some impressive like mono god builds, and there'll be some probably some powerful and dynamic ones that have three or four, you know, probably in match play, three detachments all from different gods.
Well, what they're doing with this is they're providing you a benefit inside your own codex for being really specific. And to me, it's more than just something like a chapter tactic. It's really a rewarding you for going all in on a given thing. And I really hope GW does more of this, because I think the game only gets better when you get more rewards for being more specific.
I think so. And it gets people be real fans of those specific factions again. You know, like back in the day, you know, in the early days, I'm known as an Eldar player. And right after that, I'm a Blood Angel player. And I'm, you know, and you had Orc players and Space Wolf players. I mean, that's what they were known as. They weren't meta chasers, you know, so to speak. And I'm using that term very loosely. There's no shame in playing competitively and using whatever. But I think we're going to see more of that as this game starts to reward that specificity like you're talking about.
Man, it's great. It's great stuff.
Yeah. So I know that the community site is by the time you see this, then there's going to be a lot of stuff, especially like the Loki that have been up on the Warhammer community site. And, you know, they're doing a great job of spoiling and leaking this stuff and keeping us kind of hot and heavy anticipating it. It's really cool. I always get really excited. What is it? 10 in the morning, 10 a.m. Eastern time when it gets into Codex spoiler week.
Yeah, I always get in trouble at work.
Just refreshing that phone, just waiting for those articles.
Yeah, it's real exciting. So you will have seen all the Locus and the Loki and probably some of the specific relics and whatnot getting into this. So, you know, I apologize if we go over anything that you've seen before, but some of the stuff is probably best just to kind of read it and see it there. But we'll talk about it as in reference to the other stuff in the book. Now, let's talk about some of the changes. At least a couple of the changes that are going to probably affect some people, and that is the Zinch changes to the Changeling, funny enough, and Horrors.
Yeah, that Changeling, I guess it would be foolish for us to assume that he would stay the same between releases, wouldn't it?
Indeed, he has changed.
Well, he was the linchpin of so many lists, and It was used in a way that, you know, like, I don't want to say it was an abusive use of the model and its rules, but it did create scenarios where the interaction was limited, and then the outcome of the games just weren't as fun for one player, and sometimes both. You know, sometimes there's certain rules that help you win that just aren't exciting and fun. And his was a very defensive buff. And it still is a defensive buff that it changed to. But
I don't know why we didn't see more people resummoning the changeling before.
Were you allowed to?
Well, I mean, I seemed like you could. It just says only one of this model may be included in your army. If he's dead, you got to bring him back. Still only one model in the army.
That's true.
Anyway, let's get
to you would have made it worse then.
Yeah.
I'm glad you didn't use him. Jeez.
So the formless horror, this is one of his special abilities. Well, he has the demonic ephemeral form, which is the ephemeral form gives you the plus one invulnerable save on their demonic save. And then the demonic ritual allowing him to be summoned. And that was consistent before. But the formless horror, when the changeling fights, you can choose an enemy infantry model within 1 inch of it. The changeling has the model's weapon skill, strength, toughness, and attack characteristics until the end of the phase. So he's got to be kind of in jeopardy to use that. Got to be close, but at least you can make him maybe a little bit beefier if he's near somebody cool. And then the locus of transmogrification. This used to be something a little bit different, but now it's roll D6 each time a friendly Zinch demon model within 9 inches of the changeling loses a wound. On a 6, the model is surrounded by a twisting aura of change and does not lose that wound.
So basically, he makes people think they're Death Company.
It is. It's not last wound. It's every wound. So it does give them that feel no pain within 9 inches on a roll of a 6.
It's an interesting change. It's like they were really tired of it stacking with other hit modifiers. They weren't necessarily upset with him making things around him more tough. And so I'm interested to see how this plays out in the game at large, because it's still a 17% boost to how much offense it takes to kill you. It's just different.
It is, and it's after, you know, it is at the wounding part of it.
It is. It's at a different part.
There's less wounds they get through, obviously, than hits most of the time. So.
Well, what's cool about it is now it's an exciting rule where it's an interaction rule where before, you know, you were just stripping away 1 point from the to hit. Now you're getting to interact and throw dice and stuff like that. So we're playing the game a little bit more with it, and I enjoy that concept behind it.
I think that's a good point.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
Yeah, and I think I was probably a little too dismissive when I said that there are typically less wounds to get through. You are hitting a lot more often, and so you'll have more converted wounds on what are going to probably be toughness 3 models that they're shooting at. So I do see it as a significant change and a debuff, but you're right. It's still defensive, and it's more interactive, like Troop said. You can cast and deny one psychic power. I don't believe he had more than one before.
Yeah, I think that's the same.
In this book, it's going to be neat to see when you get the codex in your hands that all of the, like, the heralds and the champion models, they're all going to get an HQ equivalent. Like, there's something in here called a Fate Skimmer, which is a herald on a Discazinch and a change caster. I mean, which is like the dude with the ritual dagger, the big giant horror with the ritual dagger. You're going to be able to see, you're going to have HQ models that you can use out of the kits that you already have, or maybe, you know, that you've harvested bits from, that you've got these models still hanging out on that you maybe didn't use before. Now you can. Like that, the Chariot of Zinch kit, who didn't get that to get a couple extra horrors and Herald.
Oh, yeah, the Flamers and the Screamers. Yeah, that was a value kit.
Yeah, now you're going to get to put all those points in, or all those bits in into your army.
So yeah, it's awesome. I love the fact that they took those kits and they're giving us nice, fun rules to use with them now.
Let me jump right to the horrors then, keep it on the Zinch train, as far as like changes about what people are probably going to hear, is that the horrors don't have the ephemeral form anymore. Now they have a rule called ephemeral demons. Pink horrors have an invulnerable save of 4+. Blue horrors have an invulnerable save of 5+. And pairs of brimstone horrors have an invulnerable save of 6.
So I think this is one of the greatest changes GW has ever made since the birth of 8th. You actually have a reason to take the different horrors. It isn't just they're all the same toughness and do slightly different things offensively. This is incredible. Like, bravo, Games Workshop. Thank you so much for doing this.
playing against this type of stuff, it was a point of frustration for a like a lot of opponents. But you hit the nail on the head, though. You never saw a unit of blue horrors, a unit of pink horrors.
No, if you wanted a infantry model that was going to be cheap, take up space, and stay alive, you just took the Brimstone because you didn't care about the marginally better offense of the other two. But now you actually have to think about it.
Because in match play, you've got to pay points for the splits and whatnot. For sure. So that just never happened.
No, yeah, but now the pink is actually tougher. And the I love it. I've hoped this would happen since I first saw the index, and this is just a dream come true.
Yeah, I think that's going to make some – this is something that, like, for LVO, for instance, this book is going to be legal, and I think that's going to really influence some people's army builds.
Now, here's a quick question for you, Paul. In the index, the Brimstone Horrors have a 6-plus save. Is that still true?
Yeah, that's a 6-plus armor save, though.
Right. So, I mean, theoretically, in cover, they would still get a 5-plus, assuming things didn't have some sort of ignores cover thing, right?
That is true.
So I don't think that the Brimstones have fully lost, you know, the potential, the damage potential, or, well, damage potential is the wrong word, damage resistance.
Their role on the battlefield that people were taking them before.
Yeah. And the big difference for that, though, is going to be, especially if we're talking LVO, a lot of those objectives aren't player placed. They're determined by the mission. So if the terrain isn't covering that and you have to hang these guys out in the open, you're going to want to think about that. You know, is this going to be the best option for covering that ground?
That's a good point. It's a big change. I don't want to make light of the change. The change is a magnitude, like, more than what we were talking about with the stuff with the changeling, if you ask me.
To make decisions. This dynamically changes list design. And now, you know, you're just going to see less of one and more of others, and it's going to be more dynamic and fun again.
Yeah, maybe so. There's a lot of new special characters, as we talked about, in this book. I shouldn't say maybe special characters. There are a lot of named characters. There is another Tzeentch character, which is a herald on a chariot called the Flux Master. Then all this
he gives all the flux.
He does. But these things that we're talking about, they buff units around them. Like, he has the Locus of Tzeentch. Add one to the string characteristic of Tzeentch demon units within 6 inches of one or more friendly models with this ability. And he has a Staff of Change. Increase the range of the model's smite power from 18 to 24 if it has a Staff of Change. So he's got a 12-inch movement. And then if you increase the smite range to 24, I mean, that's a 36-inch smite range.
You got that Hail Mary, man.
Yeah.
When you got Mortarion running away with one wound left, you know, you can really you can put some hurt on him with that distance that he's able to move and that range that he's able to shoot it at.
Yeah. And this is one of the neat things in here is that almost all of these, just like in a Space Marine book or whatever, almost all the characters in the HQ slot, they're going to buff things around them. They're going to have some type of aura that makes things that are in their vein a little bit better.
As a commander should.
The Great Unclean Ones that we've been seeing, one of those builds, the guy with the hood and like the gnarly looking tree root or whatever, the guy with his outstretched hand with the tongue on it, that is Rodigus.
The ugly one.
I don't think he's ugly.
You watch your mouth, Chris Morgan.
I think they're all ugly.
He's fashionable. Look at his hood.
Yes, he came dressed for the ball. Rodigus has an ability called the Deluge of Nurgle. Each time Rodigus successfully manifests his psychic power with a psychic test of 7 or more, the closest enemy unit to him suffers a mortal wound after the effects of the psychic power have been resolved. I think
that's so awesome.
I think it's pretty cool because there's no range on that. It just says closest enemy unit suffers a mortal wound after the psychic power is resolved. That doesn't mean he could be targeting somebody, something else. I mean, he could buff a unit near him and then do a wound all the way across the table.
No line of sight necessary, no nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I really hope it stays that way because that is the first ability of its kind. I think it is really cool, but I really hope GW doesn't come in and say, oh, we meant 7 inches.
Yeah, but, or we meant that when it only affects a unit he's casting on or something like that, if he's casting on an enemy unit. But we'll get to what the psychic powers and stuff are, but he could be casting on one unit and it affects a totally different unit with that. It's only one mortal wound, but it's just neat that it exists.
Oh, yeah, those add up.
Yeah, just to be 100% clear, does this trigger every time he casts a power?
Yeah, each time Radaga successfully manifests a psychic power with a psychic test of 7 or more.
Okay, and how many powers can he cast per turn?
2.
Okay.
So, well, you had 2 a turn.
That doesn't seem terribly broken.
I don't think so. It's not broken. It's just, it's neat. The fact that he can do this and have it affect something that's all the way across the table.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's really obnoxious, but I don't think it's too crazy.
I like the fact that you can still get some offense out of him. Say that you're casting whatever buff that you're casting on somebody, and you still get this to go off potentially and still do some kind of an offensive thing. In my mind, I'm always offensive. I don't think defense ever. So I don't like to buff my characters very, very much. So this way, it plays into my mindset where, like, I'm out there to get you and I'm wanting to tear you apart. It plays into that theme.
Yeah, I like it. Heck, he can just kind of be doing his thing or whatever, and he's just churning out just this little kind of a cumulative damage. And when he finally gets his hand on you.
It's a strong hand.
Right, yeah. Once he finally gets his hand on you, the fanged maw, each time Rodigus fights, he can make an additional D6 attacks with his weapon. And the strength of user, which is, it starts out unmodified, or unwounded at strength 7, 1 damage. But it's an extra D6 attacks. Not bad. On top of his already base 5.
Right. And then when he hits you with the other thing, it's even stronger.
Well, so the gnarl rod. Yeah, he's hitting you with when he's hitting you with the root, it's a 3 damage weapon, -2 AP, +1 strength.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about a lot of attacks that are doing a lot of damage and just adds up and adds up and adds up.
You reroll wounds with that also. So, I mean, he's wounding most things. What is he? Strength 8 with that. So he's wounding lots of stuff on twos. A lot of things on 3 with a reroll.
Those rerolls are so good, having reroll to wound. I love it.
And 18 wounds now. I believe the Grand Unclean ones have fewer wounds than the Index.
Yeah, that is a significant jump.
Yeah, that's a big increase. I believe in the Index they were 12 wounds, but now going up to 18, this guy takes 25 last cannons to kill him. So that is no joke.
Oh, wow.
25 last cannons coming from Space Marines.
Are you factoring in the resilience in that?
Yes.
Yeah, 12 wounds in the Index for this guy.
Oh, wow. Well, that is 25 last cannons is a daunting number. I mean, of course, that could be over the course of several rounds. But I also look at it as each time, if you have a model like this, this model is not cheap. What is he? He's 330 points.
That seems cheap to me for the defensive capability.
But he's an investment in points, right? Anytime you have a model that's like that, and this is something we talk about a lot, is that every round they're on the table, ideally they're eliminating threats to them. So one way of looking at it is each time he's on the table, he becomes less and less vulnerable because you're eliminating threats to him.
It's the old Paul Murphy Land Raiders in turn 5.
Yeah, if you got a Land Raider in round 5,
yeah,
you're doing right. You're doing good. This guy's better than a Land Raider.
He can eliminate threats. He can cast psychic powers, which we'll get to. He can benefit from stratagems. But having 18 wounds all in one place makes him very difficult to deal with, especially considering what else is in your army. So now, I love it.
Just as a question, is that after War Gear is purchased?
What do you mean? His points?
Yeah, the 330. Is that the body cost, or is there like a different... Or is his war gear free or something? I'm just trying to get my head around how much he is total.
That's a good question. That includes weapons. It's the point value including the weapons.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, put it in context, the Storm Raven is what, 3... It's depending on the loadout, you're going to look at like between 340 and 360. Is that right?
Yes.
Sounds right.
The Storm Raven is a 3+ armor save model without an invulnerable save with 14 wounds. I mean, it's if you're going to be spending points on something, this guy, I mean, he is going to soak up more las cannons, like Horton was saying, than a Storm Raven would be doing.
Something or even a Land Raider. Take for the equivalent point value.
Yeah. No, I think that's... And yes, there's arguments about, well, he doesn't have as much reach out and touch, and he's not as fast as a Storm Raven.
He's certainly not hard to hit.
No, he's not. But he's easier to hide behind a building than a Storm Raven, that's for sure.
That's fair.
So, I don't know. I think that guy's probably a pretty good bargain.
Real quickly, the other Great Unclean ones also have 18 wounds. So that's it, just in case that point was lost. And then there's different variants of the unclean wounds that are largely based on the weapon options that you give them, whether that be the plague flail. The plague flail works like the Dark Angel mace of the whatever their flail is. The wounds Absolution. Carry over into the unit. So it's a 2-damage weapon. And then it says a weapon can be fired within 1 inch of an enemy unit and can target enemy units within 1 inch of friendly units. It's an assault 3 weapon. Excess damage from this weapon is not lost. Instead, keep allocating damage to another model in the target unit until either all the damage has been allocated or the unit has been destroyed.
Gotta love it.
Yeah. So
Age of Sigmar style.
That's shooting, you know, and then it fights.
Was it spill over in combat too?
Well, it says you can fire it. The weapon can be fired within 1 inch of an enemy unit and can target enemy units within 1 inch of friendly units.
Yeah, but does it have an assault? Does it have a combat profile as well?
No. It has an assault 3, but I'm saying you still get the Great Unclean One Biosword or Doomsday Bell or Bioblade when you're swinging. So you're doing that in the shooting phase with an assault 3 weapon, 7-inch range, and then you're fighting with its D6 or D3 weapons damage. The D6 and D3 are damage profile. It has 5 base attacks.
That's solid.
And it's also got the attendance, claws, and teeth. That's anytime you see a model with like other models stuck to it, it's probably going to have something like this.
I like how they do that. I usually forget. I don't think I ever actually remember to make those attacks, but when I do, it's surely going
to
help.
Oh, you got to, especially when it's Mortarion.
100%.
These are not plague weapons, though, if that matters. For the Bile Blade and Bile Sword, though, it's interesting that they are not plague weapons, but you do reroll failed wound rolls for the weapons.
That makes him very good, obviously, at killing bigger things because you've got good damage output. You've got a good weapon skill. And so you're very good at chopping down bigger, tougher models. I like it.
Another interesting thing in the book is that Horticus Slimax, that really cool looking dude riding the slug out of the Blight War box set, is a character in this codex.
Too fast, too furious.
he move 5.
You better watch out. He'll run you off the road.
Lightning
for slug. Along
that's
there.
That's almost like Neverending Story slug speed.
Oh, yeah.
Did I mention
Racing that? Snail.
Oof. 5 is my favorite number, so I'm quite excited about this guy.
Does he have any interesting tech that comes with it?
He does. Now, you might have seen that in the Christmas video that they put out, that terrain piece. Like the creepy tree.
A little Nurgle forest action.
Yeah, it's called the Feculent Narmal.
Paul, this is a family-friendly show. I'm going to need you to not say that word again.
I'm going to bleep that. People are going to be like, what did he say? The Feculent Narmal is a 50-point item, and we'll get to it in just 1 second. But he can seed those out. He can seed the Garden of Nurgle. At the end of your movement phase, you can add a new Feculent Narmal to your army containing 1 Feculent Narmal. Set it up within 3 inches of Horticus Slimax and more than 1 inch away from any enemy models and terrain features. Horticus Slimax cannot use this ability if he performed a demonic ritual this turn.
I want you to say that 10 times fast, Palmer.
Horticus Slimax, Feculent Narmal. But there's no role to do that. You just get to poop it out.
That's pretty nuts. Just to plant, you could just plant this wall of trees, but and just hide your objective. Like you can't get to it.
He buffs Beasts of Nurgle. So in addition to that ability, he's a beast handler. So you reroll failed charge rolls for friendly units of Beast of Nurgle that are within 6 inches of Horticus Slimax. In addition, you can add 1 to all hit rolls made for friendly units of Beast of Nurgle that are within 12 inches of Horticus Slimax.
And that's a big chunk of distance.
That's just bananas. Like, beasts are good anyway, and those two buffs together on them just make them crazy. I love it. I feel like I got to get some beasts.
And, he's got the Plowed Slime Trail. Roll a D6 for each enemy unit that falls back within 1 inch of Horticus. Now, on a 4+, that unit suffers D3 mortal wounds.
D3.
I like it.
Wow.
9 wound character, hitting on 2+, for weapon skill and ballistic skill.
So you can't see him.
He has Lopping Shears, which is strength +1. So he's strength 6 with this weapon. Neck 3 AP with D3 damage, rerolling failed wounds for this weapon.
Yeah, Force Sword.
I feel like we all need more Horticulus Slimax in our lives.
He is unique. So only 1 can be included in the army, which is good because I still need 1. In death, there is life. At the start of your turn, if any models, friend or foe, were slain during the last turn, 1 Nurgle Demon model within 7 inches of Horticus Slimax regains 1 lost wound.
I like it. It's just one more little the cherry on the cake.
Did you catch that though? It's if any model was slaying during the, doesn't matter, it had to be within range of Slimex. If any model, friend or foe, were slain during the last turn, comma, one Nurgle Demon model within 7 inches of Horticus Slimex regains one lost wound.
That's awesome. Like, why would you not take this guy?
Like, how many points? He's got to be 600 points, clearly.
He's more than 60, less than 600. Horticus is 165 points.
Oh, my God. I'd take two if I could.
I mean, if he wasn't unique, people would take armies of him. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's a very good rule set. He does a lot of buffs. He hits like a truck. Defensively, with the 9 wounds, I like that, you know, so you can kind of... You kind of hide him up a little bit, and you don't have to worry about getting shot. So you can be a little bit loose with him, but great rules. I can't wait to paint mine.
The tree that he sprinkles around, is that when it's set up, it's treated as a terrain feature. It cannot move for any reason, is not treated as a friendly or enemy model, and cannot be targeted or affected by any attacks or abilities. So once it's down, it's down.
It's there forever.
All as a shroud of flies, all Nurgle Demon units except vehicles or monsters. That's important. Remember, like Nurgle Demon, like Martarion is a Nurgle Demon. Like just remember, obliterators are demons. I mean, this is just things to remember. All Nurgle Demon units except vehicles and monsters that are completely within 7 inches of any feculent Narmal receive a benefit to cover. But you add 2 to the saving throw instead of 1.
The synergy with that and Chaos Space Marines is crazy. Like you just said, like you mentioned Mortarion, who's a monster, but like, you know, obliterators, possessed, those are the big ones. That's awesome.
Sickness Blossom. I'm not even done with the rules. Sickness Blossom. At the start of your turn, roll a d6 for every unit that is within 3 inches of any feculent Narmals. On a 4+, that unit suffers 1 mortal wound, but on a 6, it suffers d3 mortal wounds instead. Nurgle units are unaffected by the ability. So remember that you can put this down within a certain inches, many inches of Horticus, and only have to be 1 inch away from an enemy model. Sorry, more than 1 inch, 1.1 inch.
And when do you make this roll to see if they get hurt by the cherry, like the leaves falling?
At the start
from
of
it?
Your turn. So it would have to be okay. The next turn.
The next turn.
But right. If they fall back from them, they're taking D3 mortal wounds.
I love it, man. I mean, your board manipulation, you're gaining line of sight because they look like pretty beefy models. So you're gaining line of sight. You're getting all of it.
In the book, like in the codex, it's got it on one of those like chaos shrine terrain pieces. It's about as tall as the broken column on one of those Chaos Shrine terrain pieces that has the skulls and like the platform with the... It's got the stone platform with the castle.
About 4 inches probably, then.
4 inches. And it's got the Plague Bell chimes. Nurgle Demon unit so that it wins 7 inches of any feculent Narmal at the start of their turn can shoot and or charge this turn even if they fell back or advanced.
This is like the gift that keeps on giving. I mean, I feel like you need some points in reserve to plant these forever.
It's 50 points for
what
one.
What you need is some kind of like flashcard game to help you remember what all this stuff is called.
It's got one more rule. The conduit to Nurgle's domain. You can reroll any dice used when summoning with a chaos character from your army is when 7 inches as when he attempts to summon Nurgle demons.
I feel like you just need 6 or 7 of these just in case the game goes to 7 turns so you can just plant them everywhere.
I mean, I suppose you could like buy them normal for 50 points as a fortification.
Yeah, fortification network of trees. This is great. I mean, if you buy them as a fortification, do they deploy with your army? Like, so they'd have to be in your deployment zone?
I believe they would follow the same rules for like a bastion, which do have to be deployed in your deployment zone, right?
Yeah. Okay. Just thinking through it, because this is amazing.
No, I want to crap these out in the middle of the field, because now you're taking away the battlefield from your opponent by, you know, they don't want to get too close because now they don't want to get mortal wounds. You know, you got all these extra buffs coming from it for your units that are sitting on there, potentially next to your midfield objectives and stuff like that. There's just so much play into this that's defensive and aggressive at the same time.
If you buy them as a fortification, they come at 1 to 3 models is the unit size.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that's awesome still. I mean, you can line up your, you know, defend up your the front half of your deployment zone, if you will.
So, I mean, You're telling me I can buy one of these Nurgle trees for 50 points or have, you know, Horty the Slug plant one and my Nurgle Obliterator standing next to it get +2 to their armor save, which is already a 2+.
Yes.
Like, that is like the awesomest thing ever. Wow.
The reports are in. It's pretty good.
Yeah, take 3.
At least.
I mean, why not take a lot? I mean, you could take, what, Abaddon? And
oh, yeah, he's Nurgle.
Yeah, man. He doesn't have the Mark of Chaos, I don't think.
What do you mean? He has...
Does he have Nurgle as one of his abilities? He doesn't have Demon as one of his abilities, though.
No, he's not Demon. That's where the Obliterator is.
But I'm saying that you take Abaddon and the Obliterator, so he buffs the Obliterators.
Yep. And then he doesn't get hurt by the tree's, like, disgusting leaves because he's Nurgle.
Are you sure he's Nurgle?
He's Nurgle, Slaanesh, Khorne, and Tzeentch. He has all those keywords. He has all 4 of the god keywords. He's the man.
Undefeated. Love it.
Yeah. Well, I think this thing is not terrible.
It is distinctly not terrible.
I mean, I know it's like, now, you don't get to play with it, right? You just put it on the battlefield, and you got to hope that, like, you're going to get to exist and hang out around there and do what you plan on doing. But you could also use it offensively. Like, if you're taking Horticus anyway, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't put... Okay, if you're playing demons, I'm not actually sure why you wouldn't put 150 points in just reserves.
Oh, yeah.
Period. Yeah. Anyway.
The versatility that it allows you to do match by match is just amazing.
I mean, you'll be able to do things like drop in 3 Fiends of Slaanesh. You know, I mean, and I'm just pulling things out of the air for 150 points. A bunch of flesh, 10 flesh hounds for 150 points you could summon in. 5 plague drones, give or take. 4 plague drones. I mean, this is what you could do with 150 points, just when you need it. So I'm not sure why you wouldn't take Horticus Slimux and at least plan on dedicating 50 of those 150 points to this one of these guys. Or 3. You know?
Or 3.
Yeah. Right. I mean, again, just throwing things out there. I think that that summoning right now is underappreciated for some of its flexibility.
Yeah, I mean, it's underappreciated because it's not what it used to be, you know. People are just still kind of wounded slightly over not being able to have thousands of points of remodels all the time.
Well, you have to give up your movement phase, and that's not insignificant.
Yeah, because it leaves you in the open sometimes.
Puts you way out of position to get up there and shoot. Now, this thing does not have the demonic ritual, so you can't summon this in normally. You can deploy it with Slimex, and so we're talking about, you know, summon in general, but you have to have points in reserve to be able to dump this.
Yeah, so if you buy it and use it as a fortification, you're deploying it at deployment phase prior to the, you know, round one starting, or poop.
Yeah, or the seed of the Garden of Nurgle. Now, it doesn't go out to tell you that you spend points on it, but I think we've kind of deduced that unless it says specifically that you don't spend points, that you have to spend points.
That is the standard.
There's the other Nurgle stuff in here, too. I know we talk a lot about Nurgle because we are, you know, largely fans, or at least Troop and I are big Nurgle fans. The sloppity Bile Piper.
Sing to me.
Hippity hoppity coming for that sloppity.
Yeah. Sweetie swooty.
And that sounds disgusting.
Yep. Get the disease of mirth whenever a Nurgle demon takes a morale test within 6 inches of any friendly sloppity biopiper, roll 2 dice instead of 1, discard the highest. In addition, each time a unit fails a morale test within 6 inches of him, 1 additional model is removed from that unit. So it's like a double-edged banner, and it buffs and hurts. He has the jolly gut pipes. Add 1 to the attack characteristics of Nurglings and great unclean one units that are within 6 inches of him.
Well, those two go together.
In addition, Nurglings and Great Unclean One units can declare a charge even if they advance in their movement phase if they're within 6 inches of them.
That's going to be the biggest buff where your Great Unclean Ones are gaining speed by using this.
Those things are so slow, you know, letting them listen to the sloppity bile pipes of this guy and like move faster is great.
Like, not even disguising that's what you should be doing with this guy.
He needs to be playing his tunes for the Nurgle models around him.
Yeah, and then Rodigus is a great unclean one. He has the great unclean one keyword.
I would hope so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's important to check that kind of stuff. I think we get desensitized to the keywords, and so sometimes we skip them, or we assume that a model has it and it doesn't.
Sometimes I just, you know, want them to see if we're paying attention, and they just change it to, like, you know, this one's just a good unclean one. He's not great.
Or like his keywords is character, monster, demon prince, fly, psyker, and Jeff.
It's coming. It's going to happen. They're going to sneak that in there one day. Just wait till it
Thanks,
works.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah. Bellicor is a big change. Bellicor now has his own psychic tree, separate from the demons, is that he knows two psychic powers from Dark Hereticus discipline. And then Dark Hereticus is three psychic powers on its own chart in this book. So the three chaos gods that get psychic powers have six powers to choose from. And then there's the Dark Hereticus, which is three powers only for Bellicor.
I love it. It still keeps his uniqueness.
Yeah. And it's not like in the description, like he has Infernal Gaze, and it's if manifested, select an enemy unit that is within 18 inches of Bellicor, invisible to him, and roll three dice. Target suffers a mortal wound on each roll of 4+. So it's the same power, but it's like the wording says Bellicor, not the Demon Prince or the Caster or whatever. Gaze, Death Hex, and Gift of Chaos.
I feel like I know the two I'm going to take. But you never know.
Yeah, Chaos Spawn has its own entry in here. It's not a unit you can take. They've included it specifically for the Zinch powers that spawn a Chaos Spawn. And it says, and it goes on to specifically say, in match play, you must pay reinforcement points in order to use any Chaos Spawn that are created.
Mm. Well, that's nice.
Well, I think that's, well, that's the way it was. And so you never saw, like, I never saw anybody take that power, but it would never, like, it's just a removal. It doesn't give you a unit until you pay the points for it. So Demon Princes, pretty much the same. We talk about the change to the horrors, but the points are the same. So a blue horror is 5 points. The pair of brimstone horrors is 3 points, and a pink horror is 7 points. And I believe that is the same after the first update.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. Like a lot of this stuff, I mean, we haven't seen anything like the Eldar Codex in terms of drastic points changes. This is all just rules to make things better.
Which is different than what they've done with some of the other Index to Codex changes. It's just an interesting design choice.
Yeah, I think some of the other points, like we saw a Nurgle point change, but I think we kind of saw that leading out to like, hey, get some, you know, Death Guard. Death Guard are cool. And as this, but even the Beast of Nurgle are 34 points in here instead of 38 points like they are in Death Guard.
Yeah, that's bananas. That's just giant green rotten bananas.
The new model looks pretty good. He's got that kind of like leaning back, driving his car pose.
Not a fan of the dreadlocks.
I don't mind them. I just wish I wish there was something you could do with that other arm. Like I need one that's like in a Monsters, Inc. pose where it's, you know, scare the child.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah, that model, I mean, once we see it, I'm sure there's multiple ways to build it.
Oh, man, you may have them all high-fiving each other. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's got to be something to do to kind of customize it to your liking. I truly, truly hope. Otherwise, what are they, the River Trolls are going to continue to go for me.
That's a good model. That model, you never see that model on the table. It might as well be something else. I've turned some into Chaos Spawn.
Yeah, that's what mine are. They're Nurgle Spawn / Beasts of Nurgle.
I can get behind that. May playtest some using that same thing. The big bloodthirsters, I think they got a little bit of a buff. Horton, you're the expert. You can tell me if I'm wrong here.
Yes, they have changed, it seems. Enlighten us.
The three of them. So we got the bloodthirster of Incessant Rage, and it has a mighty strike. Each time you roll to determine how much damage this weapon inflicts, roll two dice and discard the lowest. This bloodthirster, its weapon skill degrades. The other two, its ballistic skill degrades and keeps its weapon skill at 2+. This one's ballistic skill stays at 2+, but it's got the mighty strike. Again, that's one profile. When attacking with this weapon, choose one of the profiles below. So the mighty strike, I think this used to be the D-thirster. Yes. It's times 2 strength, so it'd be strength 14, negative 4 AP with D6 damage, but rolling twice, discarding the lowest.
That's what we know and love. Up on the index. That's
the
very good.
The sweeping blow, make two hit rolls instead of one for each attack made with this weapon. And so with this base 6 attacks, plus getting an extra attack for getting the, if you have it in a detachment that's all corn and you're battle forged. So that would be 14 potential attacks it could make with its sweeping blow.
That is new, and that is the best.
And it has Deathbringer. Each unmodified hit roll of a 6 made for this model's attacks in the fight phase scores two hits instead of one.
But I stand corrected. That is the best. wow, that is such a dramatic change on that model particular. In particular, the ability to run into a bunch of infantry and swing 14 attacks to hit on twos and sixes are an additional hit. That's awesome.
As strength of the user, so as strength 7, neg 2 AP, 1 damage apiece.
Wow, that's like the coolest thing ever.
So much stuff.
That kills so much stuff.
Well, it's also got the unstoppable ferocity, which if this unit charges, is charged, or performs a heroic intervention, add 1 to the strength and attack characteristics. So my apologies, it would be strength 8 if it did that, and then get the extra attack from that, I believe, yeah.
So that means you're going to kill 12 guardsmen when you charge.
Yeah,
because the sixes to hit negate your ones that miss, and then you wound on twos. It's just, I love it.
Droves.
It's awesome.
That seems pretty good.
That seems real good.
330 points.
340, it looks like.
Stayed 340, they kept, yeah, 340 points.
They kept the points the same, but they added buffs.
Yeah,
I'll take it.
The Wrath of Khorne Bloodthirster, its ballistic skill degrades. The weapon skill stays the same. It has the Blood Flail and the Hellfire, which are both assault weapons. And this weapon, like the Hellfire automatically hits its target. And then the Blood Flail is an 8-inch weapon, 8-inch range weapon that can be fired within 1 inch of enemy units and can target enemy units within 1 inch of a friendly unit. So he can fire it in combat.
I love it.
No joke. It's only assault 1, but it's damage 3, negative 3 AP, plus 1 strength.
I mean, that's a mighty pistol to be putting on somebody.
The Hellfire is assault 6. But then it's got his Axe of Khorne, which is a melee weapon, plus 3 strength, D6 damage, neg 4 AP.
Yeah, you'll mess people up with that.
It has 6 attacks, base, and also the Deathbringer.
Yeah, that rule is just such a big deal for them. That's awesome. Because that could just go crazy. I mean, every now and then, you just roll all sixes.
If you're fighting a character, he rerolls failed hit rolls.
That's insane. He's an assassin.
The Relentless Hunter.
I love it. That's really putting them back up there. That might seem like a small buff, but that really, it just, every little bit helps.
Well, when you can go and kill an entire Space Marine squad in one combat, that's pretty good.
Well, I mean, beyond that, what about that captain that's letting them, the Hellblasters or that Devastator squad, re-roll their hits? You know, like, you're going in there and you're confidently killing him.
He's killing any Space Marine character without these buffs, if you ask me. But I'm talking about
you're ensuring it. We're almost taking rolling out of the equation.
But I'm talking about the ability to go and clear off an objective.
Okay, yeah. I mean, definitely, he still has both. Like, it just feels so multi-tiered to me. Like, I'm going to kill that character because it's buffing you, and then now I can clear the objective, or vice versa. Killing the objective first would be smarter play, but it's just the versatility that he brings.
Those things aren't exclusive to each other. Sometimes you're going to need to do that. Sometimes you're going to go after them and kill Gilliman.
Right. And that's kind of what I'm getting at, is like that buffing character. I just feel like usually what we see, in my opinion, is I can kill characters in one-on-one combat, or I can mop up a unit in one-on-one combat.
These Bloodthirsters have 16 wounds apiece.
Yeah, we don't always get to see both, and I think that's the hit here that we're getting to see that's pretty awesome.
16 wounds.
Defensive.
That's the same as before, but again, more buffs. I'm going to make it work. It's going to be great.
3+ armor save with the demonic, so 5+ invulnerable, then the unstoppable ferocity. Yeah, the Bloodthirster of Unfettered Fury. To me, this seems like the standard, the old standard, with the Lash of Khorne and the Axe of Khorne, but he still has the Deathbringer. And they're all movement 12 is the base one.
Does that degrade on them?
It goes
down, right?
Yeah.
Movement is one of the ones that degrade. Movement and weapon skill / ballistic skill.
Yeah. And attacks.
Oh, well, it's okay.
The Bloodthirster of Unfettered Fury gets down to attack 2. They all do. They go from 6, 4 to 2. Those are pretty steep declines. Mm.
2 is unfortunate, but you know, just never get down there and you're okay.
Yeah. And then just roll a bunch of sixes when you do, and it's like you're at your mid tier.
Yeah, you just make it up again. It's fine.
Yeah. Get good.
Karnak, I believe, got a big point discount. He's got the brass collar of bloody vengeance. Karnak can attempt to deny 2 psyche powers and then pray to the blood god. When both armies have been set up, choose an enemy character. You can add 1 to hit and wound rolls against that target character.
Those are solid rules.
He has 70 points.
And that is a solid decrease. Karnak, he was 116 So that's a big drop for him. So wow, happy to see it.
Yeah, that's by half.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
Well, I mean, almost half. But
almost, you know, round up.
Yeah, right. His soul-rending fangs are 2 damage apiece, which I think is pretty good. Neg 2 AP, strength 5.
Yeah, for that low point value, 2 denies.
I mean, he is a character. You can't pick him out. Two denials of psychic powers, which is significant, I think. I think that we'll see kind of this weird mix. Once the full beta psychic rules go into effect, I think we're going to see this kind of a shift. Like, we're going to see less smites, but I think we're going to see more psychic powers in general. We'll see people that are really realizing they have some awesome other powers, like Wings of Sanguinus and Unleash Rage.
We almost made it one episode.
So no, close. No, we didn't.
Chris would have just shouted Mephiston at the end of the episode.
but we're talking about some of the big changes here in the book. And there are. There's more than that. But I know we're an hour in already, and we're barely scratching the surface. But that's a lot of the depth and complexity of the book itself. If it's all right, I'll jump to a couple of the stratagems, and then we'll take a break.
Sweet.
All right, so here's a neat one. One of the stratagems is demonic incursion. You guys have heard me talk about Grey Knights and how Grey Knights get a bad rap right now. People take a lot of chaos. And so it's good to pack some Grey Knights, and Storm Bolters are awesome. There's no other way of saying it. The buffs that Grey Knights get against demons actually matter in this edition, and Storm Bolters got a lot better, and you paid next to nothing for them. So that makes Grey Knights good, if you ask me. But here's this. Demonic Incursion. It's a 2 command point stratagem. Use this stratagem when one of your demon units other than a named character is destroyed by a Grey Knights unit. The destroyed unit is returned to your army at full strength and set up on the battlefield at the end of your next movement phase, anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 9 inches away from an enemy unit. This does not cost you any reinforcement points in match play. It says that right in the stratagem.
That's so beautiful.
That's so crazy.
For 2 command points, you get to go like all out with whatever your truck is. And then when it dies, you just bring it right back.
One of those bloodthirsters directly at something. If it gets it and wrings its neck, great. Right, yeah. If it doesn't, you just bring it right back.
Hey, Drago, I'm coming for you, buddy.
I mean, I think that is crazy powerful. Is it too much? Is that too much?
No, it's so situational. I think it's internally balanced that way.
Time will tell.
Yeah. Well, the fact that you don't have to make a choice, though. See, that's where I'm asking if it's too much, is that you just have this in your command point arsenal. You don't have to plan for it.
That's true. Yeah, that is true.
So that's my only comment on is this too much or not. But at the same time, it is 2 command points. And depending on when something, if you're saving it for like your, I don't know. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you just have 2 command points in your pocket for when your big nasty dies?
You never know.
You're right. You're right. Depending on how many come with to begin with. That's for sure. The stratagem section is set up beautifully. The relic section is set up beautifully because it organizes them based off of the Chaos God, and it color codes them. So you're not searching around which one's the Catechin relic, or the relics aren't color coded, but they're organized. You're not looking around and seeing, having to squint and read all the fine print before you find your Mars thing or whatever.
I really think that they did that specifically for me. I don't want to like toot my own horn, but they know I don't know how to read, and so we got to color code things. Yeah, like I know that I'm looking at Slaanesh based off of I'm looking at purple, and I'm looking at the little symbol.
Yeah, all the Chaos Demon Gods have a banner that you can nominate. If you have one of the marks, the demonic icons, you can turn it into one of the named banners, like the Plague Banner from Nurgle, the Rapturous Standard from Slaanesh. But you have to choose this before the battle. They're all 1 command point, and then you get 1 use out of them during the game. I think we've seen that mechanic before, as far as stratagem goes. So it's kind of neat.
Yeah, I was hoping they'd bring that back. I liked. Back when KDK existed, I liked taking, you could upgrade the banners to be the special banner that did a special thing. So even if it's through stratagems, I'm happy to see that return.
Khorne does get a frenetic bloodlust stratagem for 3 command points that lets the Khorne demon unit fight again. So similar to things that we've seen for other assaulty based things, they want to give you the option of being really, really fighty. As we mentioned before, there are a bunch of psychic powers in here, but there are also 24 warlord traits, 6 for every Chaos God.
No, I'm glad they did that.
It makes sense, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I wasn't kidding when I said that, like, this is like 4 armies, 4 codexes all crammed into one. I mean, it's easy to say and even easy to kind of think about, but it's not just a mono build type situation. Well, of course, it's one army. If I build all Khorne, I can build an all Nurgle or whatever. Like the codex itself exists to really flesh out your choices.
Well, it's nice to see that all the depth they added to demons in the tail end of 7th with the campaign books. You know, with the extra Tzeentch and Slaanesh stuff and Nurgle stuff, it's nice to see that that's essentially hasn't gone away, but that you still have just as much depth with that many warlord traits, relics, and so on and so forth in this codex. That's just great.
Yeah, I think so too. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about some more of this cool stuff.
Sweet.
Is your garage full of dusty old models? Head on over to Frontline Gaming's secondhand shop. We buy, sell, and trade used Warhammer miniatures daily. Head on over to frontlinegaming.org for more details.
Hey, everybody. We are back talking about demons. I got the whole crew here. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Hi.
We're back.
Going to talk about some warlord traits. And as we mentioned, that there are 24 warlord traits in here, so we're not going to go over all of them. But Horton brought up a good point, is that the name characters all have specific warlord traits like they do in the other books, and that might be kind of worth going about. Like, for instance, even Karnak has his own warlord trait called the Aspect of Death.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, each time an enemy unit fails a morale test within 8 inches of your warlord, one additional model unit flees from the unit.
I like that.
Hey, that adds up. It's a good one for him.
Well, think about it. I mean, he's got a bunch of attacks, so he's probably forcing a morale check. So maybe he finishes off that unit.
Yeah, that's a fun one. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I don't hate it. Kairos Fateweaver, Tyrant of the Warp. This is roll a dice each time your warlord suffers Perils of the Warp. On a 2+, your warlord's psychic mastery is such that they do not suffer Perils of the Warp.
That's pretty good.
That's a 2+.
That is a 2+. No more brain explosions for him.
Well, we talk about this, like, almost, you know, like cumulative damage, this damage over time type effects. You know, these ways to that you really grind out your power pieces. And Perils of the Warp is one of those ways.
Yeah, even on those big monsters, you know, losing D3 wounds here or there through the course of a game matters, especially with degrading profiles, and being able to negate that on a 2. I like that.
Yeah, the Changeling has incorporeal form. This is reduce all damage inflicted on your warlord by 1 to a minimum of 1. For example, if this warlord failed a saving throw against a weapon that inflicts 3 damage, it will only lose 2 wounds.
It's nice, but, like, it's not my favorite.
Remember, this is on the Changeling, so this is what he comes with. But you could put that on any character. I mean, like, on a Demon Prince or a Lord of Change or something like that.
Yeah, what I'm saying is we've seen this warlord trait before on other units and other books. And it's like, yeah, cool. Like, you know, I get to reduce a wound here or there. But, you know, maybe my discretion against it is it's usually on something that's like a 5-wound model. So how many times do I really get to use it?
Put that on a 16-wound model.
Right. So maybe, yeah, like on a Great Unclean one, you know, this might be I don't know, man.
Even on a Demon Prince, I think that's money.
Anything over 10 wounds, I would enjoy it more.
8 wounds.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you'll get to use it more then.
Because that's how you basically chump out a Demon Prince, is you do something that does, you put 2-3 Power Fist on it, beat him down. 2-3 Power Fist ain't killing this guy.
I think it's a good trait. I would not go out of my way to make the Changeling my warlord trait to take advantage of it.
No. I wouldn't take the Changeling and make him my warlord to get that. But that is still what he has. And it fits with his, you know, what we know about the character.
Oh, very fluffy. No doubt. I can see that perfectly for him.
Horticus Slimax. Remember that champion? He has the Acidic Ichor. Ichor. roll a dice each time your warlord loses a wound in the fight phase. On a 4+, the unit that inflicted the wound is splashed by Acidic Ichor and suffers a mortal wound after all of its own attacks have been resolved.
That guy just keeps getting better.
Right? Even when he's getting hurt, he's hurting you.
Please, somebody contact me if you have a spare.
And now he's a poison slug too. You're trying to get rid of him, and he stings you. It's great.
Abedinius, who we didn't talk about, he has the virulent touch, and this is add one to all wound rolls made by your warlord in the fight phase, unless it's targeting a vehicle.
I mean, that's pretty good. That makes him better for sure.
He still has the tally also, which gotta is love the tally. I think the chart's the same. That's something we can go over in another episode. But I think he's a good choice or a good character still. He's no Horticus Slimax, but few are.
Hey, but they can work
thank
together.
Goodness. However would we say their names?
Sloppity Bob Pipers. It's going to be... I feel like I'm saying something dirty.
Hippity hoppity. Oh, my gosh.
The Mask of Slaanesh has the murder dance. If your warlord...
They took that one from the Space Wolves, right?
Yeah, that's right. It comes with the Murder Fang accessory pack. His murder dancing shoes. But no, this is the Mask of Slaanesh. If your warlord charges in the charge phase, add D3 to their attack characteristic until the end of the ensuing fight phase.
I mean, that's certainly not bad. Not sure if I'd want to power up the mask with that, but
well, I mean, these are just what they come with. That was a good way to kind of isolate some of these traits to talk about without just going down the line. Number three is the murder dance.
Oh, yeah.
On the Slaanesh warlord chart. But for instance, the celerity of Slaanesh, add 3 to your warlord's movement characteristic.
Well, that's pretty great. That'll be used.
I mean, it's important to realize that the movement trait, it's very significant because the number of turns you get through in a game are finite. I mean, either the game ends or you've only got, 5 turns that you get through in the time of the tournament or whatever. And so each one of those rounds, you can only move so far. So anytime that you bust it open like that and add that much, you've added an additional 18 inches over the course of 6 turns just in the movement phase.
No, I agree with you. The movement phase is one of the most important. It's movement phase is how you win games, getting into position to either be defensive or be offensive. So that's a very good trait to gain.
And now how liberal it is, like with the fight phase where you pile in and then consolidate. And then if you're moving an extra distance, I mean, you're covering tons of ground that your opponents have to be able to compensate for, because you're not going to put that on something that's moving 6, right?
No.
That's tootling around and, you know, an extra and 9 inches to go and deliver his 3 attacks or something like that. You're not doing that. You're putting this on something that is a juggernaut, you know, a battlefield Cuisinart, essentially.
Yes, a battlefield Cuisinart.
Slaanesh also has a fatal caress. Each time you make a wound roll of a 6+ for your warlord in the fight phase, the target suffers a mortal wound in addition to any other. So something you want with a lot of attacks. Now, I wish there was a stratagem that let you load up the warlord traits, because it sounds like you could. You remember the combat drugs you used to be able to take for like a demon prince? Like, I'm going to take 3 shots of this and then roll the dice and see if you got any like dice free take wounds or whatever.
For that 6-month period that book existed, it was amazing. And yes, that was awesome.
Wish you could do something similar with these warlord traits. Like, can I risk some mortal wounds on myself to load up on several of these Slaanesh warlord traits?
Hey, GW, if you're listening, we'd all love that.
I'll pay for it. The Skull Taker, who we didn't talk about, also has the on the Khorne side, has the Devastating Blow. And that is, each time your warlord fights, it can make a single Devastating Blow attack instead of its normal close combat attacks. If it does, make a single hit roll. If successful, the target suffers D3 mortal wounds. I'm not sure when I'm using that.
That sounds very situational, but... Basically, if you absolutely have to kill something, you're basically saying on a 2-up, you're going to lose your last Drago wound.
With a 3+ involved, you know,
yeah, I could see that, save. Right? Like, he's only got 2 wounds left. He needs to die. You know, because you don't have to do it, right? But you can just say, okay, 2+. Oh, look, you're dead. I'm sorry, Drago.
Yeah.
No interaction for you.
Yeah, I think that is. I mean, how many times has Magnus been at 1 wound?
Exactly, right? Some model like Magnus that has a monstrously good and vulnerable save. You can just be like, taking that away.
This is one of those things, like, I don't know how Skulltaker is getting to Magnus, but you're...
We'll worry about that later.
But your Bloodthirster, you know, flying with winged Bloodthirster might get there.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like he's got some other things to deal with Magnus. You know, whatever. Look, it's situational. I don't know that I would go out of my way to pick that, though. And I'm not sure when I'd be in a situation to win where the Skulltaker would use it. But it is nice to have it. It is way better than some trait that may never come up or whatever. I don't know if it's better than a 6+ Feel No Pain. Demon Spark in the Tzeentch table is reroll wound rolls of 1 in the shooting phase for friendly demon Tzeentch demon units that are within 9 inches of your warlord.
Ooh, that's a pretty awesome buff.
Yeah, that's not on
the 9 inches. Yeah,
that is on the blue scribes.
Wait. Read that again.
Reroll wound rolls of 1 in the shooting phase for friendly Tzeentch demon units that are within 9 inches of your warlord.
You realize that's the one buff Chaos Space Marines don't have? is reroll shooting wounds? They have no way to do that.
Oh, because the lieutenant, the Dark Apostle's only melee wounds.
The Exalted Champion is reroll all failed wounds, but it's only in combat. That's the check on it, right? So I always look at the combos, right? That not only is that going to be super good for demons, but you can make obliterators ridiculous with that.
It's pretty awesome for Games Workshop to give us 2 Codex Obliterators this year.
It is. This is awesome.
Look, Obliterators are awesome. I'm not even joking. I think that's you have to look at it that way as the way things mesh together. And that's,
well, I mean, we're all fascinated by the Chaos Space Marine and demon interaction, so it's got to be on your mind as you take this stuff in.
Yeah. So, man, I like it. Rodigus, did we cover his Pestilent Miasma?
No. What's he do?
Roll a dice for each enemy unit that is within 1 inch of your warlord at the start of your turn. On a roll of a 4+, that unit suffers a mortal wound.
So he's like Typhus.
But he's also, remember, that's the guy that has the ability to, like, zot you with mortal wounds all the way across the table.
Oh, he's just a mortal wound machine.
Yeah, but I think that's good.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
When I
that's
think Great Unclean One, I do think of mortal wound machine.
You do.
Yeah, this is a good book, guys.
Oh, you sold me the second you started talking about it.
Slyticus Orbit or whatever.
You had me at the Horticus Slimix.
Slimix.
It's like the bibbity bobbity boo of
it's chaos a good book. Demons. And I do think there are like 10 armies you can make out of this book.
It's better for everyone. I love that they're putting so many options in here.
Yeah, and we were joking around about the Chaos Soup or whatever, but I do think that when factions, these iconic factions like Chaos and Orcs, when they are stronger, the game is just more fun to play.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Everyone likes a strong bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they've always found a way to make Eldar strong and Marines. You know, there's always going to be some kind of good Imperium. But when you can have one of these, like what we would consider like the archetypical good versus evil battles, and have both sides be capable of winning, I think the game is just more fun.
I'm with you.
Yeah, well, let's talk about a little bit the hobby side. This is not going to be a true finishing moves section, but more since it's the beginning of the year, it's a perfect time to talk about hobby resolutions. And before we get too deep into it, this is not something that people should be stressing themselves out about. This is something that remember, we're doing this for fun, and all the stuff that we do on the hobby side is the real long hours. That's the hours we spend in the hobby. Most of us spend more time putting figures together, painting figures, making army lists and that kind of stuff more than we actually spend playing the game. So this should be your chill time, your relaxation time. I think it's good to have goals and even be excited about them. But remember, this is the fun part, or one of the fun parts. You guys kicking up any New Year's hobby resolutions?
And I'd love to get back to painting some of my own models for 2018. That would be swell.
Well, you just got done with school, right?
I did. Yeah, I just graduated with a bachelor's, and now I'm looking for some new work, and it's nice to have some spare time to devote towards hobby projects. Mostly right now, though, so far as hobby is concerned, I'm doing commissions.
Well, that is cool, but I mean, you are at least not having to work several hours on papers or whatever, so maybe you can funnel some of that into some of your own projects. I was working on this Blood Angel stuff, and I post my work in progress stuff up on Twitter, and people are very supportive. But that's so cool. Like, my entire Twitter feed is all hobby folks, and it's all people just really being supportive of everybody's efforts, and it just helps keep you going. So if you don't already participate in that kind of stuff, we've talked about that in the Finish the Move segment before, highly encourage it. But I've changed this Blood Angel army like 5 times, and it's minor tweaks. It's adding a unit here, adding a unit there, but that all means that something's got to get done. I mean, and this is stuff like adding intercessors or interceptors. I'm going to call them the
Inceptors.
Inceptors, right?
Yes.
Those are all different units.
I know, right? Almost calling them what we say off air or whatever.
yeah.
But I decided, and this is going back to like one of our army build segments that we've done in the past about like, I need a unit that does X. And I want one that also fits within like the core of the Blood Angels or whatever. So I right. thought a unit that can deep strike in, okay, Blood Angel check. It is has assault weapons. That's pretty Blood Angel-ish, right? And has the potential to do mortal wounds when it charges. Like, well, who doesn't like that? And they got a point reduction recently in Chapter Approved. So, you know, let's look at them. So I'm putting these guys in there with their assault bolters to be able to help clear screens. And then I figure when they, you know, and they're going to want to charge. So if I can do some work and then fall back and shoot again or, you know, redeploy them with a command point or something like that, then that's all what Blood Angel want to be doing. And if I can really open up a hole for my death company to come in and do something when they land and clean up, you know, essentially break the back of the enemy, then that's all contributing to the success of that. Now, I know that was like a long way of saying that I had to paint six more models. but, you know, but I did. But that's what I've been doing for the last week or so. And, you know, but when you make a change like that, it changes other things in your army list, which means you have to paint more models.
Or that's very true.
Borrow more models from Chris.
Also true. Now, I think if I'm going to focus on my own hobby goals, just, you know, we'll put aside the commissions. We'll put aside everything else going on right now for stuff that isn't mine. One of the things that I really want to do is add a bunch of Primaris stuff to my Blood Angels force. I'm really fond of the Intercessors, Blood Angels Intercessors. I am also very much interested in Aggressors and Inceptors, and I'd love to have a force of Blood Angel stuff for that. And then as a secondary goal, applying transfers to all of my Forge World stuff, because I recently got a bunch of the Forge World Horus Heresy era Blood Angel transfers.
That's so good. All of this, the artistry on the decal sheet.
Exactly. And I've been preparing for that for a long time. There's a very specific reason why there's not a lot of freehand like symbols and numbers and squad markings on my 30K stuff.
Because I saw that stuff.
Well, it does. But I've done that on my regular Blood Angel stuff. But the transfer sheets that they were putting out for the other factions just looked so good, right? And then they put this super unrealistic standard of like putting frickin' murals on Blood Angels tanks in book 6 for Horus Heresy.
Yeah, so, the typical Blood Angel tank looks like this chapel.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the Sistine Chapel with, you know, red stuff. So having the transfers now and being able to apply those and having kind of gotten the technique down for doing transfers last year, I want to go back and kind of brush up, so to speak, on all of those 30K tanks that I also use for 40K and really give them sort of the finishing move touches that we talk about that are going to give them character, give me those extra hobby points, do all of the little squad marking things that we know and love and that we preach on the show.
Awesome.
I think that's going to be one of my, you know, first quarter 2018 goals.
Gordon, how about you?
Well, you know, those are some high goals to try to meet that Chris Morgan has thrown out there. But what's been on my mind for this upcoming year are two things in particular. One, I want to build a new display board. My current display board that I use, the one-size-fits-all board that matches the basings of all my army, is kind of small, and I want to build something big, something that I actually like a display.
Some people walk by and stop.
Yeah, and it's like a scene, a battle scene of something. So it'd be really big. It would take up a large part of a table. So I really want to try to build a proper display board as I see it. And then I need to keep chipping away at the great Zangor project that I hope to finish this year.
For Sigmar? Or is this for 40K?
Oh, you can use them in 40K. They're just waiting for
us. Oh, no, I get it. I know that, but it sounds like you know, I don't know how good Zangors are.
Hey, it turns out they're real good if you have a million of them.
Okay.
But I'm racing towards getting 99. I have 50 all fully painted and ready. You know, been working on that since Wrath of Magnus came out. And this year, the goal is to get 49 more so that I will have 99 Zangors ready to go when the Thousand Suns Codex eventually comes out.
That's pretty cool.
I'm excited about it.
No, it's a lot of Zangors. Those are great goals. That display board stuff, I mean, that's that is often overlooked. Like, you don't think about it until you're 3 days out from the tournament and you look at their rubric and they give you 2 points for a display board. And you're like, crap, let me throw one together. And then when you have one, you just, that's just what you exist on, you know, because in a lot of cases it is just a couple of points.
Well, that's kind of what I've done. I made one for a tournament a long time ago, and it just kind of coasted off of that one thing. But now it's time to step it up and make something.
It's a labor of love. Better. It's something that you can do. You can, like, you've got your army the way you like it. You've got your basing scheme the way you like it. You know the approximate number of figures that you're going to play with in every army. You know, and I don't mean down to the last one. You know that, you know what 2,000 points looks like and how much space it takes up for the armies that you like to play.
Yes.
And so you're finally at the point where you can focus all that into an awesome looking display.
That's the goal.
That's a good goal, man. I can't wait to see how that comes along. My actual resolution is I'm going to paint the crap out of one unit of Harlequins.
Interesting. You're trying to go like Golden Demon level.
Yes. That is.
That's a year-long project.
You just described what I'm going to try to do.
Oh, we see.
Right. I mean, it's like I painted one Death Jester last year, and no one can tell that the checks on his cloak, I'm sorry, on his coat and tights were supposed to be diamonds. It's a checker pattern. Mm. Which you can't tell, but I know. I need to get those diamonds looking a little more diamondish, and I'm going to try to do that successfully, you know, over the course of 10 more Harlequin figures over the course of this year.
It's a good goal, one that I don't have the patience for, but I salute you for undertaking it.
But it's one of those things you like sit down and you clear your mind. Like, I knew that I wasn't going to play Harlequins next week. Like, that was never something that I don't do that. I'm a painter for the armies that I plan to play in tournaments. That's what I do. I occasionally undertake one, what I call a vanity model or something, just because I need to get it out of my brain or something. But I don't paint casually. I'm, you know, air quotes right there. But when I sat down with that Death Jester, I knew it. I knew I wasn't going to use him in an army next week or even next year or maybe this year or whatever, you know, but there was nothing on the horizon. I just painted purely for seeing if I could do it, figure out what my skill level was, and then trying to isolate things to improve on. And I think what I want to do, and I love Harlequins. I want to really put a lot of just time, spare time, complete hobby, complete painting time into a project like that.
I'm excited to see what you're able to produce. Well, sounds good.
Probably a lot more checkerboard patterns, yeah. But we'll see.
I'm going to have to be opening up that Twitter a little bit more. Maybe I'll hop in on all that, help have people help keep me accountable for my goals too.
Dude, it really matters. Even if you don't do Twitter or whatever, just having an accountability partner really matters. Like when I was doing the Sylvaneth for Age of Sigmar, I had an accountability partner who was working on the Lizardman army, and we would send each other pictures. This is just on Facebook Messenger, me and one other guy sending each other pictures of, hey, this is what my Saurus looks like. Well, hey, this is what my Treekin look like. You know, just to keep us motivated to get the armies done.
And let me tell you, need that.
Yeah. Let me tell you how satisfying it is in a table war, seeing your Sylvaneth army in a table war case. It's part display, part protection, all satisfaction.
Nice.
Yeah, it's right near my the entrance to my hobby area. I smile every time I walk past it. Like, yep, I did that. Now I'm going to have some Harlequins, hopefully, at the end of this next year that are right next to it. It's going to be a much smaller display, but yeah, you're just a pure hobby project.
Hey, sometimes you need those, and especially if you've been working on one faction for a while. Having that little palate cleanser can help get you reinvigorated for the next project.
Well, and especially like with the Harlequins, it's not like I can't, if I do happen to master some checkerboards or some diamond patterns, it's not like you can't do that on a shoulder pad of a Marine or something. You
know, techniques are all transferable.
Yeah, it's a worthy engagement endeavor. Well, I said, I know this has been a long show, and please, if you guys, I'm sure lots of people out there are doing hobby resolutions or whatever, share them with us. I want to know. Heck, you know, share us on Twitter again. Start this whole accountability chain of things. Might be fun to track. Do updates throughout the year. I don't think we've done anything like that where we do periodic updates throughout the year, making ourselves actually accountable for our. But I don't know if we've declared them in the past either. What our resolutions are, but we're going to do it. We're going to make ourselves accountable.
Yes, make me accountable. Make me pay yep. Zangors.
You got 49 Zangors and a display board to come up with, Mr.
I do.
Mr.
I've got a lot to live up to.
Well, guys, I know it's been a long show, and we're going to talk more about Demons next week. Talk about our various tournament preparations that we got going on, getting ready for things coming up in the first part of this year. The three-man tournament, the announcement is going to go up pretty soon. It's going to be a two-day three-man tournament we're helping host at Gigabytes Cafe here in Marietta, Georgia. Oh, Horton, this is very similar to the three-man tournament we ran at Warzone this year on Friday night.
Yep, that'll be fun.
Yep. Where cumulative scores, of course, the format will be, we'll be talking about that along the way. I think it's going to be a fun thing to explore and see if, see how people abuse it. And I mean that in a tongue in cheek way. I mean, whatever, this is seeing how people maximize it, I guess, for crushing victories.
I'm coming off of probably my last tournament in this ITC season, this last weekend. So that was cool.
Well, you won.
I ended up winning with my Blood Angels Brigade, the Pain Brigade. It was a lot of fun. Nice. You know, it's great looking at the community where it is now. I remember the first tournament I ran at that store, we had 5 people. And now, you know, we're anywhere between 16 and 22 when we're running tournaments at that store. So it's really cool to see that. But we had a good turnout, lots of really good players. You know, we had Thomas Oki, who was a top Space Marine last year, and then we have one of the top 10 ITC people who was playing the Space Wolves at the list as well. Dave, I call him Dave the Hammer, because he murders me with Hammer of Wrath in 7th edition. But I managed to pull the win out, and it was very cool, very fun. Kudos to everybody who showed up.
That's some tough competition, man. Congratulations.
Yep, I will be 100% honest. You know, we Thomas and Dave ended up playing each other and tying, and that's what got me the win. Otherwise, I probably would have gotten second place.
That kind
place.
Of stuff happens all the time.
Yep. And that's part of the luck, right? So kudos to them for both playing really good games. And because they're essentially, it would have come down to battle points. Who would have? Because at an RTT, you can't always go until there's one guy who's always won all of his games.
Right.
But it was good. It was fun. It's nice to get rolling dice again. It was kind of like my post-graduation present to myself.
Well, guys, hope you all have a good rest of y'all's night. We'll talk next week.
Cheers. Yeah,
everybody.
Thanks for listening.